welcome to another episode of Pilgrim Devotion. I'm your host, Pastor Michael Howard, the senior pastor of Seaford Baptist Church. This is a podcast for anyone inside or outside of Seaford Baptist Church who's living the pilgrim life, representing the kingdom of God in the kingdom of man. And it has happened. We have a guest. I've been promising guests for weeks. I'm like, we have guests coming. And I'm sure that the listeners are like, it's just you every time. Where are the guests? Well, today we have our guest. I want to welcome Shelley Durkee to the podcast. Shelley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we are here. I wish that we were talking about something that was a little bit more of a joyful topic, but Unfortunately we are talking about something that we need to talk about. It's necessary, it's important, but it's heavy. And that is sexual abuse reform, the Southern Baptist Convention, and all of the things that kind of go along with that. Our goal here is not to have an exhaustive conversation where we overturn every rock and we have all the answers. Instead, this is a Southern Baptist pastor and a Southern Baptist and a church member. I look at you as a leader in our church, for sure. And someone who this has touched your life. So we are having a conversation. That's what this is. We don't have all the answers, but we are having a conversation about what those answers might be. So we hope this will be a blessing to those who listen, despite the fact that it's heavy. We hope it's informative. We hope that we do maybe come to some good conclusions through our conversation. And so let's just start with Shelley, who are you? beyond even your story and how this has touched your life, just like, who is Shelley Durkee?
Sure. Hi, I'm glad to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation, even though it is a tough subject. It is something, like Pastor Michael said, something that is vitally important that we have conversations about, that we are open and honest, transparent, that we don't hide things in the closet. These are tough things to talk through, and so I'm looking forward to this conversation with you. Who I am. I am a mom of four. I have four young adults now. They are all, I've got two who are in college. I've got one that is married and one that is serving in the Navy overseas. Great kids. I am very blessed. We are a tight family, and I'll share some more about that a little bit later.
Your crew.
My crew.
Yeah, you've always used that term, crew. Your crew. Yep.
They are my crew. So, and then I'm married to Ken Durkee. We've been married 6 years as of this last Sunday.
Also known as Rodney Quarles. Yes. So that the inside joke doesn't go past people, you all had custom drumsticks made for him for Christmas a few years back. Yep. And they didn't come with his name on it.
No.
They came with the name of Rodney Quarles. Didn't you track down Rodney Quarles?
You tracked him down first. I found him, and we had a conversation with him, and he said, well, you can send them to me if you want, and then I never did.
That's awesome. Every now and then I like to call Ken Rodney.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We were married in this church 6 years ago on a Sunday afternoon.
One of my favorite days.
It was phenomenal. When I think back to that day, I can't help but feel that joy. It was just having our church family there to worship with us what God has done in both of our lives and bringing us together. So,
You're a Midwestern woman?
I am. I'm from Iowa. So I've got that Midwestern vibe going on. We moved here in, 2007, 2008, been a member at this church all that time. I love this church. This church is family to us, as it should be. So I can't say enough good things. And you'll hear a little bit about that during when I share my story with you all.
And Ken, your husband came to Christ here at the church. Mm-hmm. We baptized him. Mm-hmm. When he started dating you, he was an unbeliever that we were all like, who's this guy coming around Shelley? Yes. And we all grew to love him.
Yeah.
And
in fact, I wouldn't let him sit with me when he first started attending the church, because I knew the church was very protective of me for good reason and in a very good way. But I knew that there would be a lot of people approaching him, trying to figure out who he was if he sat with me. So I made him sit up in the balcony for, I don't know, at least almost a year.
And he is also, I think you were wanting, if he was going to know Jesus, it yes. had to be because he was falling in love with Jesus, not yep. because he's falling in love with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
And it was awesome to watch Ken go through that, to answer mm-hmm. his questions. Mm-hmm. So I don't want it to be a podcast about Ken, but sure. we both love Ken, so yep. we could talk about him for a while. So, yeah, I want you to share your story, but I want you to share as much of it as you're comfortable sure. sharing. You came here, I think we can definitely say this much, you came here as a pastor's wife.
I did.
Mm-hmm. In 2000, you said 7 or 8.
7 or 8, yeah. Something
and, yeah, so tell us a little bit about that and how all that kind of played out, again, as much as you're comfortable yeah. sharing.
Absolutely. So, before we came to, I was married previously to a pastor, and before we came to Seaford, we were at a church in Hawaii. Hawaii is where my ex-husband grew up. That is his home. We were fortunate enough to be able to go back there and serve in a fantastic church, University Avenue Baptist Church. Loved it there. My kids loved growing up there. And then out of the blue, now that I look back, my husband, who was senior pastor there, said he felt he was being called back into youth ministry and started looking for a position. I didn't think too much about that at that time. You know, I just thought, all right, God, if this is what you want, you know, we'll see what happens. And we got connected with Seaford. I don't remember how. But we came out here, and the church, you know, voted to bring us on as youth pastor's wife. I'm going to probably move into the story now, our story.
Sure.
And I think before I do that, I want to preface it by saying that I hope that you will see God throughout all that I share. Because he has been with us every step of the way. And I want to start that by saying, right before our lives fell completely apart, and I mean that in absolutely every way, my oldest daughter and I, and then the interim pastor's daughter, and myself were in Kenya. And for 2 weeks, we were on a mission trip. It was phenomenal. It was tough. And I remember speaking to a group of Kenyan women. They were all widows. And we were together in a study. And I was speaking to them out of a, using a translator. And we were talking about one of the ladies brought up the verse in Job that says, though he slay me, yet I will praise him. And then another lady brought up the verses in Habakkuk, I think it is, that though the tree fades, the grass withers, and I'm drawing a blank now, but do you know where to find that?
See, I thought you were going to go Hosea 6. I thought, because I know that's been important to you as well. But I'm open to Hosea here, but anyways,
yeah.
Go ahead. It's all right.
All right. All right. But during that time with those ladies, I remember very distinctly getting a sense. I'm there to minister to them. That is my goal. That is why I'm there. And instead, I just had this feeling, and I'm not a supernatural, you know, mystical, everything's a sign from God person. But I had this distinct impression that what was taking place in that mud hut was meant to comfort my soul. Mm. And I was so struck by it that afterwards, it bothered me even. Because I thought, wait, you know, why? What? I'm here to give comfort to them, these women who have lost everything. Probably a third of them had AIDS. It wow. was a really tough situation, yet they had so much joy in their suffering. And I remember thinking, okay, that's a really It was just a really odd thing, and it stuck in my head, and it's still there today. I can easily remember the exact feeling I had. We came home from Kenya, and of course we were very tired, jet lagged, and trying to get back into the routine of everything. And it was a Wednesday morning. We came home like on a Friday. The following Wednesday, my ex-husband had told me, you know what, I'm not going to go into church this morning. You know, I'm going to stay home and, you know, we can catch up. You can tell me more about your trip. We can go get breakfast. I was like, that's great. That's awesome. You know, the kids were off at school. And I went and was doing something in the kitchen, turned around, and he comes back out. And now he's in a suit and tie. I said, you know, what is this? And he said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I forgot that tonight is the budget meeting. And he said, I feel like I need to go over to the church and help the staff prepare for the Wednesday night meeting where we're going to discuss the budget. That's all right. That's fine. All well. All is well. We can do that. About an hour later, I received a call from, of all places, the sheriff's department.
Right.
And they said, Mrs. Duffer, we have your husband here. He has been accused of inappropriate relationships with an underage minor. Can you come here? Mm. We need to talk to you. And at the time, I was thinking, this can't be real.
Yeah.
And I told them, I don't know, I'll have to call you back. And I hung up on them, and I started making phone calls. Thinking, this isn't happening. This is a joke. This is a bad joke, but something is not right here. I call the church office. Hey, have you guys seen Jack? No, we haven't seen him this morning. I start calling around to some of his friends. I call the interim pastor's house. Nobody knows where he is. The sheriff's department keeps calling me back. I keep answering and saying, I can't right now, you know, I'll call you back in a bit. I'm still calling people. In my mind, I'm thinking, this isn't happening.
Right.
This is not happening. And then finally they called back and said, if you don't come up here, we are going to send somebody to get you. I said, all right. At that point, I did call our interim pastor, and they came over, and his wife, and they shared with me that the previous Friday, when, you know, we had just returned from Kenya, I was in bed asleep. There was a, they had received a notification from a father who was angry because of a text message he had seen,
right.
Something like that. And some of that is fuzzy to me, but I remember them saying, you know, they'd come talk to Jack. That's my ex-husband's name. And he had said, well, it's all a misunderstanding, you know.
Right.
And the thing about it is, Jack is a very charismatic individual. He is very likable, full of energy, good with words. And so he convinced them, I'll take care of it. I'll tell Shelley tomorrow what's going on, you know. And so he was going to tell me Saturday. He never mentioned it to me. I heard nothing about it until this went down on that Wednesday. So the pastor's wife, you know, the pastor knowing, okay, I need to deal with this. He came over here to the church to start things in motion here.
Right.
The pastor's wife went with me to the police station, the sheriff's office. And I went into an interview that was nearly 2 hours long.
I can't even imagine.
2 hours long. And at times, they were doing their job. And I cannot say enough positive things about the sheriff's department and the way they handled this. But at times, understandably, they were asking very pointed questions of me to find out, did I know?
Right.
That this was going on. Did I have knowledge of this? Did I try to cover anything up? All of this was going down. And then they told me something that really brought the situation hard down like a rock. And they said, well, Mrs. Duffer, we have your husband in an interrogation room. He is telling us that these things that he has been accused of are okay because they are how people show love to each other in Hawaii. And at that point I knew this is beyond the realm of anything anybody can understand. And at that point, they weren't going to arrest him. In fact, the sheriff's department said, you know, we don't have time, you know, to chase something that may just be, we don't have the evidence, right? And they said, but your husband is probably going to lose his job, and you need to be prepared for that. You may need to leave the area. They were telling me all of this.
Your life is just being blown apart moment by moment.
Yes, within, and it doesn't feel real at the moment. It doesn't feel like, how can this be happening? I love this man.
Right.
Right? And of course I'm thinking, how do I tell my children? What are we going to do? So, taking the story back over to the church, Seaford Baptist went into crisis mode, and very appropriately, and they immediately suspended him. They did not hide anything from the church. I do think that maybe the business meeting was canceled that evening, and it became a family meeting. This is what has happened. This is what is going on, family, and we need to be praying. And you need to rest assured that your staff is getting the help they need to help us as a church navigate that. So all that is going on. And at this time, you know, my children are getting off from school, and I'm trying to figure out how do I break this to them?
Oh,
how do
I tell them this? I cannot even.
And, of course, kids are smarter than I think we give them credit to.
Sure.
For. And they, you know, they read the room pretty good. And so they could sense, they could pick up something was really off. I told them we were not staying at home. I tried to play it off. In my crazed mind at the moment, hey, we're going to go to a hotel and, you know, it's going to be fun. It's because you guys have been doing a great job in school and we're going to go swimming and all this. And they weren't buying it.
Right.
They were not buying it. But that's what we did. We went to a hotel. We swam. The pastor's wife stayed with me through that night. And, you know, I got in touch with somebody who helped me shut down my Facebook page, shut down his Facebook page, all the things that, you know, okay, let's circle the wagons.
Right.
Let's get as small as we possibly can in order to handle this. It was a terrible night. I've got the kids, you know, kind of whispering to each other in the corners, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And finally I had to tell them, your father is in trouble and he has done something. He has committed a crime. And, this crime is very bad. At this point, I didn't tell them what it was. But I need you to know that we are going to be okay. And it's going to be scary. And I'm going to have to ask you all to do things that you're not going to want to do. And you need to know that I understand that. And that, but the five of us are going to be together and we are going to figure this out. And of course, there were tears. They were terrified. They finally got to sleep. The next morning, when I woke up, the pastor's wife and I got into her van, and she shared with me that she had heard from the church. Somebody across the street had called the church and said, did you know that Pastor Jack is getting arrested right now?
Mm.
Sure enough, that morning, I guess they had continued to investigate the day before. Put him in cuffs, put him in a car, drove away. And then, you know, truly at that point, the reality set in. What are we going to do? The next thing I remember is getting a call from the church warning us that the news trucks are on their way. And at that point, it's instant fight or flight.
Right.
Right. So we came back to the parsonage, which is where we lived, right next to the church.
Where I now live.
Where you live. Yeah. Yes, yes.
By the way, you may hear some children's screams in the background. We have our early school on the other side of our wall having, I think that recess may have just started for the three-year-old. So I apologize for the background noise if you hear it.
Good times, good times. But that was, I knew I needed to protect my family from the public eye. And the only thing I knew at that point was to get them away from here. And so brought them to the parsonage. And as any survivor will tell you, there's a moment that you go into just complete survival mode. Mm. I got them each, I got two suitcases, one for each of them to share. And I told them, you need to pack your summer clothes and you need to pick two or three toys that you want to keep. And then I want you to really think through that, because we will not be coming back to this house and everything else will probably be given away. I need you to go to Hawaii for a couple weeks. And here's why. And then I explained to them what was going on, that their father had been arrested, and that and why. And I just remember, it was stunned silence. At that point, it wasn't tears. It was stunned silence. And they went down your hall,
yeah,
to their individual rooms and did exactly what I'd asked them to do. They got their summer clothes. I could hear them in the background. I'm on the computer dropping, using my credit card and dropping money on flights to Hawaii for the next day, which was not cheap. But I'll back up. Their grandparents live in Hawaii, and so that's why I wanted to get them as far away from here as possible.
And you have maintained a great relationship.
Fantastic.
With them throughout this, all of this.
Fantastic relationship with them. They are retired North American Mission Board missionaries. Two of the most godly people I know on this planet.
They always come, and when they come to visit here, they're always super encouraging to me about my sermons and everything. So they're very good.
Very good people. Very good people who also, in this moment, have had their heart shattered.
Right. Yeah.
Completely shattered in pieces, yet did not hesitate to say, send them to us. We've got it. You do what you need to do. And I remember the kids, you know, I still hear the conversations in the background. It's surreal to think about it, to think that they were sitting there asking each other, well, I like this toy, but maybe in a couple years, this one might be my favorite. Which do I take? And it's just too much. It's too much to handle. Fast forward. He is arrested, and now it's all the things that come from after that, right? It's more conversations with the sheriff's department. It's, do I get a lawyer? Do I get a divorce? Where am I going to live? How am I going to provide for my family? We no longer have insurance. It's all of those questions that come crashing down on you in the moment, on top of this man that I love has done this terrible, horrible, evil thing to a child. And it's nearly too much for a person to handle. It is nearly...
I'm overwhelmed just listening to you recount the story, as I imagine our listeners are as well.
It's just... the emotions come so fast and furious that it's almost easier to not feel, to not experience them. You almost go into like automatic mode. I can't.
It's like when somebody gets in like a car accident and they're in shock, and somebody comes up and they're like, "You're bleeding," and you're like, "What are you? I'm not.
I'm not. It's yeah.
Like, No, you're bleeding from your head, you know?
Yep.
It's like you're just, your emotional system just goes into shock mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I remember I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. I mean, all these things going on, but I can't process anything either. The moment that changed, of course, now my children are in Hawaii and I'm telling people, come get the stuff from our house, you know,
right.
And there's all this stuff and I can't take it to Hawaii with me. I don't know where we're going to land. I don't know if I'm going to be in Hawaii long term. I don't know where I'm going to go. I really don't. I don't have any place to go. And I remember, I don't know if it was the week after. Well, let me back up. At that point, there was one victim. Jack was out on bail. I did not do his bail. Somebody else did. He was out on bail. And I got a call from one of my dear friends who said, we need to come talk to you. And at that time, she came over with her son. Actually, I don't think her son came with her. I think she just came over. And she said, last night, our son shared with us that your daughter had confided in him a year or two ago that she also is a victim of your husband. And you know, as horrible as the first wave was, there are no words to describe when you as a parent hear that your child has been harmed in a way that is truly unimaginable. And you know, you can fix boo-boos. They can fall and skin their knee and you can fix them. You can even help broken hearts to a degree.
Right.
But when a child is harmed sexually by a parent, by a father, there is a pain there that cannot be touched apart from God. It's just not possible. That morning I went and confronted him. He was staying with church members. I went and confronted him, asked him if this was true. He said yes. He had done this thing, and I said, you know what I need to do. And I went to the sheriff's department and reported him for this. They went and rearrested him, and this time without bail, obviously. It was a very difficult thing. It was a very difficult, not even the right word, Pastor.
I
don't even know what the right word is.
It's one of those things you just don't have the language for.
Yep. Yeah. And then, so he's back in prison now. I'm sitting in the sheriff's office, and the sheriff has to interview my girl, who is thousands of miles away from me now, by herself. I mean, she's got her grandparents there, but she has to take this call from the sheriff, who has to ask her hard questions.
Right.
And all I could do at that point, the shock had worn off, and now I'm a basket case. I'm literally on the floor of the sheriff's department in a puddle, in tears, listening to my girl. I can't get to her. I can't be with her. I can't hold her. I can't.
Probably felt like a ghost.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And hearing that go on, so proud of her. That's her story to tell.
Sure, yeah.
But I'm so proud of her.
We don't have to go into detail.
But as a mother, I was shattered. I was shattered. And then each of my kids also had to be interviewed. You know, there had to be a level of investigation to find out, okay, what else is out there? Tip lines were set up in every state we had ever served in. It was on the news, every state we had served in. Every church that we had been a part of, they were notified. It was everywhere. It was all over online.
Yep, and trying to, I mean, when I came to this church, mm-hmm. I started looking, spring of 2011 is mm-hmm. when I started, I sent my resume to this church. I Googled the church, and it's the first thing that would come up, mm-hmm. you know, even above the church's website. Yeah. It's no longer the case, which I'm thankful for sure. your sake, but it's like buried down in the cache now, you yeah. know, a few
I think numbers the last down. Article I found, I was actually doing some research last night, and I found an article from Wavy 10 from 2022. That was the last article I've seen.
I remember seeing the video of the press conference out in the parking lot, you know, with our old interim pastor, so.
Yeah. So it was everywhere. But I'd like to take the story now to the grace of God. The immense comfort and sovereignty of our Lord and Savior. Because, you know, at the time I was making so many decisions. And are they the right decisions? Are they the wrong decisions? And I had at that point decided, okay, I've got everything lined up here. I've talked to the lawyer. Things are in motion, you know, for the divorce. The house, the parsonage is getting taken care of. I can now leave. I can get to my kids. And I knew, you know, I'd been encouraged by a couple of people. There were very few people that had access to me. Our interim pastor and his wife protected me, even hiding my vehicle at one point so the news people would not find me.
Wow.
So there were very few people. They were keeping the church informed because everybody wanted to know, understandably, out of the kindness and goodness of their heart, are they okay? So they were, but they were keeping me protected, which was the right thing to do. But I'd heard from a couple people, you know, please come to church. We want to see you. Please come to church. And so I thought, okay, this is going to be my last Sunday. I'll never see these people again, so I'm going to go. And I remember walking into the church, into the sanctuary, through the side door, which I always come in. And one of our church members was there when I first walked in. And the moment I walked in, I was a little late. The moment I walked in was when our pastor at the time was announcing to the church family that Jack had been rearrested. And I could hear that audible gasp. Mm. And that church member, it was just she and I in the wings, and she ran for me and folded me in her arms and said, I'm so sorry, and just held me there. And just that little gesture, she didn't ask me any questions, she didn't, you know, she didn't pry, it was just, I love you and I'm so sorry. And I think that's the point where healing began. At least for me.
Yeah.
Came in, sat in the sanctuary. I don't remember a thing that went on in that service. I remember shaking throughout. At the very end of that service, you know, we've prayed, it's over. One person came over to talk to me, then another, and then another. And before I knew it, there was a line. I was on the front row, and there was a line of people waiting to love me that snaked all the way around the sanctuary.
Wow. It's like when somebody joins the church, kind
yes.
of, you know?
Yes, exactly. That was what it was. And, you know, most people didn't know what to say. And who does? Who knows what to say in that situation? They would just hug me and... Some people slipped money into my hands. I even had one person slip me some anti-anxiety medicine that they had in their purse. And the pastor's wife at the time grabbed it and said, she doesn't need that. We're not giving her prescription pills.
Yeah.
So, but it was that kind of outpouring of love and compassion.
I know a family that was new to the church, was visiting.
Okay.
And that Sunday... convince them to join this church.
Really?
And they're still here and they're dear members. So
that that's a beautiful picture of redemption. Mm-hmm. You know, taking something that's so ugly and black and just shadowy and evil, and then not that the act is redeemed. It's not. It is an evil sin what took place. But watching God move and be sovereign in the midst of all the pain and the horribleness is something that transformed my life. I feel like there's a certain degree that it transformed this church's life.
I agree, absolutely.
And others that heard. I know I've taken a lot of time with my story.
This is good, though. I think so. Obviously, you're still here.
Yeah,
church stood by you. And I think about Hosea 6. Come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us that he may heal us. He has struck us down. He will bind us up. After 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will raise us up that we may live before him. Let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going out is as sure as the dawn. He will come to us as the showers, as the spring rains that water the earth. And I remember you reading this in a meeting I was in and relating it to your story. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think of you. It makes me think of the church through all of this. Mm-hmm. I definitely think, think about theodicy and
mm-hmm. yep.
the greater good defense
mm-hmm.
and just the redemption that he did bring out of the evil. It's a beautiful thing. And I think it frames up the rest of our conversation.
I do too. Yep.
So, are you comfortable stopping here? Or do you feel, is there anything else you want to say about your story?
No, other than to say, obviously I did come back. I had many people, and my story goes far beyond this church. I have many people in this community. I have many people in other churches. I have people in the school system who said, come back. We will take care of you. We will walk beside you. We want you here. We want you and your family here so we can love and protect you and help you move forward.
Yep.
And so I didn't have anywhere else to go. So
the Methodist church down the road was a part of that. You know, it wasn't just our church.
Yeah, so. They provided housing. The Presbyterian church provided counseling. They paid for our counseling. They found somebody who did my resume. The pastor there even traded cars with us so that my kids would not have to learn to drive using Jack's car.
Hmm. Wow.
Just little things like that, you know.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
Well, this frames up the rest of the conversation, so we'll stop here. We'll have another episode, which will air next week, and you all now understand who we're talking to, which I think is important, because there's times in the sexual abuse stuff, I don't necessarily, like, I'm talking, and I'm like, who am I to talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
Now you all who are listening understand who we're talking to, and why that you are so passionate about this, Shelley, understand the context. And I hope that it frames up now a very important conversation about sexual abuse reform in the Southern Baptist Convention. So we'll stop here. I think that of all episodes, it's important to ask these questions that we ask at the end of every episode now. Christian, how is your soul doing? How is God's grace at work in your life? You've heard about his grace and how it was there for Shelley. How is his grace at work in your life? How do you want his grace to be at work in your life in ways that maybe it is not right now? If you consider these questions and you need a pastor to talk to, you can reach out to us at connect@seafordbaptist.com and we will get back in touch with you. But we'll be back with part 2 coming to you soon. Until then, keep living the pilgrim life.